I Hate the News is the weekly news bulletin from I Hate Politics podcast, a show about a human activity you love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. The week of October 29th, 2024. Washington Post's unprecedented decision not to endorse a presidential candidate in this year's election leads to widespread subscription cancellations. But another institution, the Democratic Party in Maryland, goes the other way, stepping into school board races that have long been nonpartisan and no-go for political parties. The charged political atmosphere has had one good consequence: increased turnout. We have the latest local voting numbers and more. Stay with us.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by UMBC's Political Science Program. If your goal is to make a meaningful impact with a career in local, state, or federal government, discover what this degree can do for you. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society functioning precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now. Music for this episode comes from Washington, D.C. area post-punk rock band Gray Swift. Mike Mangiaracino on guitar and vocals, Fabrizio Cariani on guitar and backing vocals, Evan Hurd on bass, and Chris Blackburn on the drums. The songs come from their album, Closure Ends. We start with a new poll on housing sponsored by the urbanist group Greater Greater Washington, which has found that 73% of Montgomery County Democrats support attainable housing strategies, the county's effort to increase housing density and address housing affordability, including via changes to zoning law, which have long and dramatically favored single-family homes over smaller and therefore cheaper units. The poll surveyed 505 likely Democratic voters between September 26th and October 2nd this year. This polling is politically significant because it seeks to counterbalance official public hearings on the subject the County Council held in September and October, where there was an overwhelming opposition to its proposals, including changing zoning. Opponents argued that the affordability rationale was fake because a new condo would be valued at $750,000 and could not be considered affordable. To which housing advocates say expensive condos will replace even more expensive single-family homes and house more people. The polling is demographically closer to the makeup of the county. While the public hearings were expectedly and overwhelmingly wider and older, Greater Greater Washington has said that the survey reflects a silent majority of county residents who are younger, less white, and newcomers who cannot or do not go to public hearings to express their political preferences. The County Council, which was once solidly behind the housing density strategy, has been wavering. Following several public hearings, County Council member Natalie Fanny Gonzalez, for example, said on the Kojo Namdi show that she wanted to see more affordability requirements. This means that developers and the county would have to find ways to build more deeply affordable apartments, which means finding more money to subsidize them or forcing developers via a new law to cross-subsidize affordable homes using higher prices for market-rate homes. These types of policies are believed to dilute the impact of density and affordability proposals simply by discouraging more developers from moving forward on new projects. What does it mean for a news outlet to endorse one political candidate over another? This weekend, the Washington Post caused a big stir in the region by refusing to endorse a candidate in the 2024 presidential elections. The decision was made by Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, who bought the Washington Post a decade or so ago. Bezos reportedly silenced the paper's editorial board, which had written a long justification in favor of Kamala Harris and against Donald Trump. Also reportedly, Bezos was concerned about the backlash from Trump if he were to be elected. He did not have similar concerns about reprisal from Harris. The Washington Post has long had a history of political endorsements, certainly in presidential races, but also down ballot. This year alone, the Post endorsed candidates in Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. Most visibly, the Post editorial board endorsed in Maryland's U.S. Senate race in favor of Democrat Angela Alsobrooks over Republican and former Governor Larry Hogan. The outcry over the Post's decision was immediate. The company has not released subscription cancellation information, but it is widely believed to be large. My Facebook and Twitter timeline filled up quickly with announcements of canceled subscriptions, but also pushback saying canceling the Washington Post subscription will hurt the paper's reporters and editors more than it will hurt Jeff Bezos, who made the choice. The news magazine The Atlantic has called for canceling Amazon Prime membership rather than Washington Post subscriptions. Bezos has deep pockets to ride out most short-term impact. Moreover, residents and subscribers in the Washington Post's geographical area in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia would have voted for Kamala Harris in significantly larger numbers anyway. The absence of Post's endorsement is unlikely to change those numbers. So why the controversy? In the last decade under Bezos' leadership, The Washington Post has sought to be a national and international newspaper rather than being a DC newspaper with some wider reporting. So there might yet be some impact on vote counts across the nation. But the real problem with Bezos' decision is to illustrate how the guardrails of democracy fall, not under attack, but willingly. The road to tyranny involves violence, no doubt. But for violence to occur, our institutions have to fail first. Many of our institutions, like democracy itself, are fragile, dependent on our support for them every day, never to be taken for granted. There is going to be a great deal of teeth gnashing over the Washington Post, Jeff Bezos, and the possible election of a candidate who has promised fear, violence, retribution, division, corruption, exclusion, chaos, cruelty, and self-aggrandizement. For a long time now, this has not been a matter of policy difference over immigration, inflation, education, or even age. Certainly, listeners of I Hate Politics know this well. The decision pending, the decision ahead of us, is what you will do to strengthen democracy beyond whatever happens November 5th. How will you replace the fall of the Washington Post in your life? The easy answer is to subscribe to I Hate Politics and other news outlets that are experimenting both with how to cover the news, but also with ownership models. One of the innovations starting in the 1990s, but growing rapidly in the last 10 years, is the concept of nonprofit news. In Maryland, for example, Maryland Matters does exemplary work on reporting on the donut hole of political accountability, which is state politics. Locals get attention via questions like zoning reform. National news gets attention from the likes of the Post. But in the middle, that coverage is missing, and therefore, the work of Maryland Matters is golden. But what nonprofit status means is also that IRS code 501c3, which governs the operation of nonprofit news, specifically prohibits political activity, which includes political endorsements. I Hate Politics is in a similar place, also experimenting with our governance model and our coverage. Our endorsements are to be found in the I Hate Politics episode library. We have all six Montgomery County, Maryland Board of Education candidates on the ballot for November 5th. Listening to them will make your decision easier. You can search for the candidates by name. We have an interview with the architect of the county ballot question A over county executive term limits. Again, listening to that interview will make your decision easier. On state question one, enshrining reproductive rights in the Maryland Constitution, we are making an unequivocal yes recommendation. As if on cue, one public institution that had in the past stayed at more than an arm's length distance from some types of political activity has now made the decision to become involved. The Maryland Democratic Party decided this election season to become involved in nonpartisan school board races. I asked Vice Chair Charlene Dukes to explain.
It is unprecedented, but we also believe that school board races have been politicized, and they've been politicized actually by groups like Moms for Liberty and the 1776 Project. Some are saying that they're institutions of grooming. Others are saying that they treat young people like slaves because there's this regimented curriculum. And what we're saying is that that even education itself represents a democracy. We're not against Democrats who are running. We are against these ideologies that, quite frankly, have the opportunity really for negative consequences for millions of young children between pre-K and 12th grade here in the state of Maryland.
You identified Moms for Liberty and the 1776 Project as politicizing school board races in the state. How closely do you think the Maryland Republican Party is associated with these groups, and what role do you think they are playing here?
Whether there are connections or not, I think that what I would say, lay people make those connections because they use the same speech.
What I'm hearing from you is that you don't really care if the Moms for Liberty and 1776 Project is in any way related or not to the Republican Party. They, in and of themselves, are the problem that you're attacking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the problem that we're attacking.
Are you focused on certain geographical areas?
If we think about LaToya and Congolo in Anne Arundel County, who's called public schools institutions of grooming, and that denigrates the LGBTQ plus community. You have Brenda Diaz, who likened the public schools to slavery because, again, as I've already said, what she sees as a rigidness in centralized curriculum. And we believe that those are two examples, and we know that there are other examples that are around the state of Maryland.
Please speak to the two school board candidates directly and tell them what exactly they can expect from you in terms of, can they, for example, put their literature at a Democratic Party table at a polling place? Is that okay?
We will support Democratic candidates according to their need. Some communities will need more than others, that we will certainly provide them with information with which to arm themselves as they think about their own races and their own language as they're campaigning. I think the other thing is that they will recognize that we will be here to support them in whatever way they need it, relative to information, to language, to literature. And that's what we're here for.
Is this also include money? Are you going to give them money to be able to organize
better? It depends on what financial need is. In some cases, that may be true. In other cases, it may be None.
Do you see this expansion into school board races as a one-time thing, or do you think this is going to be the new normal going forward?
We will certainly keep our finger on the pulse of it. And when we move in and lean in, we will. And when we believe that things are, candidates are doing what they need and they don't need the party to be spokespersons for them, we won't.
Charlene Dukes, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to meet you.
The Maryland Democratic Party's decision does not automatically travel to all the state's 24 jurisdictions where political parties have their own bylaws. In Montgomery County, for example, the Democratic Central Committee bylaws do not allow involvement in nonpartisan school board races, and party workers manning tables at polling centers do not allow school board candidates to put their campaign literature on their tables. You can see this from time to time, but it is really a personal decision by a party worker rather than committee policy. We end with an update from the outreach director of Montgomery County Board of Elections, Gilberto Zelaya, known everywhere as Dr. Z.
On day one, we had over 23,000 Montgomery County voters show up at our one of 14 early voting centers from 7 to 8. Outstanding. Across the state on day one, it was over 154,000 Maryland voters showed up. Right now, the first 2 days, over 45,000 Montgomery County voters leveraged early voting as an option. And across the state, over 194,000 Marylanders showed up at the polls at their corresponding early voting location.
So these are 14 locations spread all over the county.
Correct. And it's been excellent across the board at our 14 centers compared to what we saw in the primaries and compared to what we saw in 2020. Voting by mail. As of now, over 182,000 Montgomery County voters have requested to vote by mail. In-house, we have received over 86,000 mail-in ballots, whether it's through a Dropbox, a post office, or in person, or even being dropped off at an early voting location. Today, Saturday, actually, is we're doing our third canvas. And since the last two canvas dates, we've accepted over 37,000 mail-in ballots. So we're trying to reach that 50, 60,000 threshold of canvas on November 5th. We will present the first outcomes from those canvas mail-in ballots. Then whatever was submitted in person over the next 8 days during early voting at our 14 centers. And then lastly, whatever trickles in on election night from our polling places.
So you said 180,000 people have requested mail-in ballots. The total number of Montgomery County voters is
687,000 given take. Yeah, 687,000. About 20, between 20, 25%, I think, if you look at the numbers. So 182,000. Now, we hope that all 182,000 are returned. So far received 86,000. Hopefully by the eighth day, we will get more mail-in ballots. We'll get those numbers crunched on the 31st of October. The mail-in ballot request deadline is the 29th of October. And if you request a print-at-home web delivery ballot, it's November 1st is the deadline. So we still have a couple more days.
Is it the case that there are more requests for web delivery mail-in rather than actual ballot mail?
No. So right now, out of the 182,000 mail-in ballots, about 30,000 of those are the prints at home or at the office web-delivered ballots. Obviously, you know, we have to duplicate those web delivery ballots by bipartisan teams. It is a process. I get it. If you're doing research on Mount Kilimanjaro and you want to get your ballot back to us as soon as possible, the vast majority of those individuals are within Montgomery County. And I get it. We're in this era of Amazon.com and you get everything you want, at, you know, on your front porch by 10 p.m. the next day. But it's part of the process. We have to duplicate those print at home ballots.
Gilberto Zelaya, thank you once again. We'll see you next week.
My pleasure.
Sit down. That's all for this episode. Be sure to check out our feature interview series that comes out Friday mornings. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, and assistant producer Adama Gay, with support from University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Washington, D.C. area post-punk rock band Gray Swift. Mike Mangiaricino on guitar and vocals. Fabrizio Cariani on guitar and backing vocals. Evan Hurd on bass. And Chris Blackburn on the drums. The songs come from their album, Closure Ends.